Looks like I have to use my phone.
Welcome to the Hawk Talk podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. I'm your host, Tony Lundy, and with me today is Parker Limonsall. Parker, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tony. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm just excited. We got these winter sports coming through now to enter the spring, and figure that's where we should start talking today.
Yes, absolutely.
So starting off, you know, our baseball team is in Tennessee, and they are not doing so hot. What is what's going on there?
There's a lot to break down with this team going into this year, and this is like it's a year of change because we did lose. Like you talked about last season about the team losing a lot of key pieces, and we did lose some key pieces going into this year. If I remember right, like Griffin Kern, and who was the ace of the staff last year,
right,
left to go to West Virginia. Which congratulations to him. He showed his talents. He deserves a shot going to a D1 school. But at the same time that we lost, I think we lost, like, what was it, Dustin DuPont we lost last year?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, losing...
And Simp.
Yeah, we did lose good old snazzy, jazzy Austin Simpson.
Yep.
But, yeah, losing those guys, it's almost to be expected that this was going to happen. And plus, as we know, being here for the last 4 years, that the Hawks... Ignore that. One of my friends is trying to call me, so I'll have to get back to him on that. But anyhow, when talking about the baseball team, they always face the top teams in the country very early on. I mean, right now they're playing Lincoln Memorial, but then their next season, not next season, next series, right, pardon my English there, they go on to Tampa to play the University of Tampa, and Tampa is always near the top of NCAA Division II baseball. So right now, I just take what we're seeing from the Hawks with a grain of salt, knowing that these guys, especially the guys that are having to fill in, are going to learn and they're going to adapt, and that will make them successful. But with that being said, we still do have to talk about what happened in the first few games of the year.
Yeah, yeah. So we're currently 0-2. I mean, we're playing a 3-game series against Lincoln Memorial right now, and we're currently playing at the moment, bottom of the ninth. But for the first game, I mean, both losses that we took for the first two games were one-score games. Now, the first one, we lost 6-7, and the last one was a very, very devastating heartbreaker.
Yeah, that second game was definitely rough. I mean, what was it? It was just a bad ninth inning all around. But before we talk about that, let's talk about the first game, though, first to keep everyone informed about what happened. So in the first game, the Hawks just got off to a very rough start when it came to starting pitching. Cade Ruffner started again for the first time this year, so it looks like they're trying to make him the number one guy in the rotation this year, and he went 2 2/3 inning, and while the stat sheet says he gave up one earned run, you look at it, it says 5 runs, and if you're going against the best of the best in the country in D2 baseball, that just isn't going to work.
And, right.
And when you get down that early, especially like I just mentioned, like with having a lot of guys having to fill in, and for those big players like Simpson, like DuPont, like Kern, you're going to need to have solid pitching to give your guys a chance. And giving up 5 runs in the first 2 2/3 innings ain't that.
Right. Now, one thing that's not talked about is if you look at the scoring summary of that game, it looks really tough on just defensive work in general. Because, I mean, let's see. The first run, it says unearned. Second run, that's a double. That's good. Reached first on an error, so then that score's unearned. Then they did, you know, a fielder's choice there. Reached on error. Reached on error. I mean, even we reached on an error. Like, whatever's going on, it's just a defensive thing. So maybe they're just testing out stuff. I feel like it's like I feel like every year we have this struggle when we go down and make these big trips early on in the year. Like, it's just their way of figuring themselves out.
Absolutely. And I mean, I will give full credit to the bats for the Hawks. I mean, they put up six runs. Six runs is still a very good job.
Yeah.
And we look at that hit column. 15 hits. I mean, you can't complain about having 15 hits when it comes to that. Because, I mean, you got David Broughton. He was the leadoff man last year as a true freshman. He comes in this year. He goes 1-for-4. Matt Mateo, he's helping fill in. New guy on the team. He went 1-for-5. Huff went 1-for-2 with an RBI, a walk. Cole Erickson, 2-for-5 with an RBI. Byron Blaze,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
4-for-5. I mean, if you're going to have to make up for Dustin DuPont leaving and we need a new catcher, I mean, that's a way to make your name out there. That's definitely right. One way. And then you got Carson Moreno, 2-for-5. Jake Vitale, we love you, Jake, 2-for-5. And then Ben Dalef going 2-for-5. So, like, at least the bats are there, which is a key for them. It's just, you just got to get off on the right foot when it comes to pitching, and that's going to be the important thing going forward.
Right. Now, let's look over on that other side. I'm going to say this right now. If you are putting up 15 hits in a game, you probably shouldn't be losing that game.
No, especially when you look at the stat sheet and it says Lincoln Memorial only had 3 hits. I mean, that's you would think, like, oh, in that case, unless they just somehow just kept getting walked and walked and walked, they're going to win. But then you also look, and then the Hawks, like you mentioned, had 4 errors.
Right, right. And then you sit there and you're saying, like even before you think about the errors, the first thing you're thinking is, oh, maybe the pitching just had let up a lot of walks and stuff, and it caused issues. Cade, 4 walks, so that's rough. But then you add 4 errors on that, and that's just a tough way to start the year.
Oh, absolutely. But I will give credit to Tom Konzemius for coming in relief, going 5 1/3, only gave up 1 earned run, but 2 runs total, which probably one of those errors probably played a role in that. But overall, and only gave up 1 hit, 1 walk. He struck out 9. So, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to maybe seeing Tom get a little more of a starter reps, especially because he is a graduate student. He has that experience that definitely people want to keep tabs on. And I just really, really think that the Hawks should consider making him the 4 guy in the rotation. Again, I don't know who is in the rotation, because they can sometimes kind of change it after the first few series, but I would not be opposed to seeing Tom get more reps as a starter.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to it either. I mean, yes, did Lincoln Memorial score on a wild pitch? You know, that's how they won the game. Yes. But, you know, how many times do you hear Tom Konzemius going in for 5 1/3? This is something that could be developed, kind of like a Michael King, I won't say AJ Puck, because I think he should probably stay reliever, but something like that, you know?
Absolutely. And, like, actually, and I actually wanted to make sure I had this right before I said it, but Tom had 13 appearances last year, 9 starts.
Okay.
So he was part of the starting rotation last year, but it wasn't immediate. So I guess the big thing I'm questioning is, why are we not giving him more reps as a starter and putting him, especially because you knew last year Cade was very limited in his pitch selection. You knew that he had very wild command. He never really was consistent. And I'm just a little surprised that they decided to bring him out there for opening day. And I mean, that's all respect to Cade. He's a better baseball player than I ever could be. So full disclosure on that. But I just think Tom should see a lot more starting opportunities higher up in the rotation. And maybe we do what we did last year and send Cade into the bullpen and see what he's got. That's going to be up for Coach Shiz to decide.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, I agree. I agree with that. I can't argue that. I just think we need to have better immediacy on things, you know, urgency to trust what we're doing. You know, if you saw some promise out of Tom Kazemius later on in the year, then that's good, you know, like, but that should be like a starter then. If you're confident enough, because how did last year end? We went on a very, very hot streak and got enough to, you know, get in. And I mean, we got in when the time was right. So
yeah, like last year we went to the GLVC conference tournament. We were red hot. We came in and we pretty much went clean through the bracket all the way until the end when we lost to Maryville. And that was a Maryville team that was one of the top teams in Division II and had one of the best closers in Division II. So you can't necessarily like look at last year and like say, oh, well, there was no progress made, because there was a ton of progress made at the end of last year. But I also don't want us to fall into the boat last year, because we were talking last season about this on this very same podcast, like Ben Drager. Why weren't we seeing him sooner than what we did? Why weren't we seeing more, I guess, parity in the bullpen, seeing different guys? Like, it just felt like we were seeing the same guys until the end of the year when they finally started kind of, I guess, I don't want to say fiddling, but started kind of like experimenting and trying new things out in the bullpen, and it worked. So the one thing I would say is that we've noticed for these first couple games, and again, got to be patient, but don't be hesitant to experiment with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yesterday was a very, very rough situation to be in.
Yeah. So for those who didn't know, the Hawks did lose that game 10-11, which caused them to go 0-2. And it looked like in the top of the eighth, when the Hawks scored 5 runs to put themselves up 10-4, that this game was done. It felt like it, that the Hawks were going to get that first big win of the year, get the monkey off their back, get the win, and then the bottom of the ninth happened.
Yeah, and to just give a quick rundown, there was a double RBI, a single RBI that scored 2, a single RBI that scored another 1, and then a walk. So, yeah, a walk that scored a run, another walk that scored a run, and passed ball unearned.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. And it's a shame, because it seemed like, and like I said earlier, like the bats are doing what they need to do. Yeah, you cannot deny that the bats are doing that. Scoring 10 runs, putting up 9 hits. That game the Hawks had no errors, so you couldn't even blame like true like defensive errors. I mean, there's wild pitches and all that, but that's not truly on the defense when it comes to like first base, second base, shortstop, etc. But that pitching, that's got to start clicking. Like giving up 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth in a game you're up 10-4. Is unacceptable. It just flat out is, no matter what level of player you're at, whether that be playing Major League Baseball or whether that be playing in the Frontier League with the Gateway Grizzlies, that kind of stuff's just, you just can't do that. That
right. And in good news, the Hawks just beat the Rail Splitters. So they will take a 1-2 out of that series.
Yeah, it's that's good to hear with the breaking that they won the game. What was the final score of it by chance, Tony? Did you catch that?
6-5.
Hawks. Oh, so so it's gonna be one of those moments where we're gonna have heart attacks until that final out comes in, huh?
Yeah. To put it into perspective, the Hawks, after the eighth inning, were up 6-3. Aiden Collins came in and loaded up the base. Ended up getting 2 outs in the process. Loaded the bases, though, for Manship to come in. Nobody had scored at the time, so you had bases loaded, 2 outs, bottom of the ninth, every kid's dream. You hit a grand slam, you win the game. No. Manship saves the day.
But still, I mean, to be up by three runs, down to two outs, and then you still gave up two runs is still very concerning. And I think that's the big thing that will, and we kind of, like I said, or maybe like just kind of saying the same stuff, but that's kind of just what this series was. This series was very much the same thing all three games.
Yeah.
The bats show up. The bats do a ton of work, but that pitching just cannot, especially in the bullpen.
Right.
Apart from the first game, that was phenomenal bullpen work by Kenzemius.
Right.
But like game two, shoddy bullpen work in the bottom of the ninth cost the Hawks, and it almost did the same thing tonight. So one thing, that's something that they're going to have to clean up if the Hawks want to get back towards the top of the GLVC.
Yeah. Quincy in this game had 10 hits, no errors, and Lincoln Memorial had 6 hits and 1 error. But, yeah. So, I mean, it was easily a series that could have been a 3-0 or at least a 2-1, obviously. And it just hurts. It hurts a little bit, but, you know, they got to move on. They got a few days to rest up before they got to go play University of Tampa, and that's going to be a real tough series for them. So I'm glad that they just got that one win out of the way. They needed that.
Yep, more than ever did they need that first win of the year. We didn't need a last year situation starting off the year.
No. But we're going to push over to men's basketball and women's basketball, but we'll start off with the men's. The men's are currently 8-14 on the season, 3-11 in conference, but they're currently riding a 6-game losing streak. And I think that they look a little bit better than last year.
They do, and I think that's just Coach Hoyt's new perspective on the game and that enthusiasm coming in. Because, I mean, like you and I were talking about it, when he was hired, like, he just seemed like he enjoyed the experience a lot more than most people do. Like, wasn't it, he said at his press conference, like, this is cool or something like that.
Yeah. He mentioned the fact that, you know, there was all these cameras on him and, bright lights and everything. And while he's giving a speech and everything, 'cause I was there for that. And he was just saying like that he's never had that, you know, answering questions and stuff. So, it was all a new experience for him, especially coming from a community college at John Wood here in Quincy and coming to a D2 university. So,
absolutely. I mean, and you look at the GLVC standings and you see that the Hawks are tied for the bottom of the conference. Like, to a lot of people, that should be concerning, that you would think at least. But you also have to look at it in perspective. Like, you kind of talked about it. Hoyt has coached a lot, his almost his entire coaching career as a head coach at John Wood, also where he spent time as the AD. So he's taking a huge leap in competition because for those who aren't aware about how kind of the hierarchy of college sports goes, you have your D1 schools that are at the top, go into football, that comes a different perspective.
Right.
Then you got D2. And then there's the debate between NAIA and D3. Just depends who you ask. And then there's a relative drop when it comes to that. Like, you talk about junior colleges and community colleges, which I'm not saying that there aren't talent at those levels. It's just that there's a different level to it. And I think with Coach Hoyt, it's just that he's trying to adapt his coaching style to the D2 level, and he's just going to have to work through the kinks, and that's really what this season's about. Got to keep that perspective. And also, don't forget, he got hired awfully late in the recruiting game. So he was kind of pretty much stuck with having to get guys that really didn't have the time to make their decision. Like, they were like, I need to make a decision while I'm going to college right now, or guys that were transferring from community colleges. And that is something that going into next season is definitely going to be something that I'm sure he's going to put a lot more emphasis on. So I wouldn't be shocked to see if the Hawks bounce back going into next year. And overall, I know there's a lot of people putting a lot of pressure on Hoyt to get this program back because on track because Hawkins had a hard time doing that. So a lot of people are putting pressure like Hoyt's going to be the savior and all that. Just you and I watch a lot of college football. We're Michigan fans outside of being Quincy fans, of course. We were talking about Sherrone Moore, about how a lot of Michigan fans were all up in arms about him midway through the year. Just let the man cook.
Yeah.
And the same applies to Hoyt right here. Let the man cook. Give him a few years to build his program. There's no need to put this program in a, oh, we need to win now scenario, because that's what causes programs to sputter, is just this constant chaos of, oh, we need a new head coach, we need a head coach. Just let someone have the reign for a few years. And I'm not meaning 2 years. I'm meaning three or four. Give them a couple of recruiting classes.
Right.
And just see what they can bring in through multiple seasons. And that's when you can truly judge somebody. But basing them off 1 year is just flat out not fair.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's doing a good job. I really do like the team, actually. I think that we have a lot of good players. I think that they're all very good in their own way. But I think that they're very individualistic to some degree. And I don't like using that word when it's a team sport like basketball, because you really do need – it does take everybody. But, I mean, we'll go off the last game. We were both watching it. Elliot played a very good game. Took a lot of shots. Made a lot of shots. But there was times where I was watching and, like, they threw a couple out of bounds trying to pass it over, and there was just frustration, and you could see it. And I get it, because we're playing Drury and we never had a lead in that game. We, for the first half, at the start of the game, we were down 14-4, brought it back to get tied, to go down 8 again, to get it tied, to go down 8 again, to get it tied. And it was just constant until, obviously, we lost 72-90. But, you know, and then you got Logan. He's pretty good in the paint. He got a couple boards, made a couple shots. I'm pretty sure he had over 10 points himself. And then, I mean, it's just, it's tough. Yeah, Logan had 12 points. Jake is very good. He shot 5 for 11. Kind of gives you like a Russell Westbrook feel, where he's like a taller point guard. You know, he's a taller point guard and he can drive the basket, has some type of shooting to him, and he'll go up for a rebound. Obviously, he got 6 rebounds, but it does not help that the last game, Ethan Brown went out in 1 minute. He recorded 1 minute in the game. He fell over, and I promise you that shoulder is probably dislocated.
Yeah, you were telling me about it, because for the full disclosure, for those who don't know, I performed at the halftime show and the guy-girl dance, which was country-themed.
Yeah.
So I did not get to see this, so I only heard about a lot of this stuff from secondhand accounts, and I think I prefer to leave it that way. I would prefer not to see anything relating to that. But it is a loss for the Hawks this year, because Ethan Brown, being a transfer from the University of Illinois Chicago, a D1 school, definitely is a part to this team that really it suffers to lose, especially if it is a dislocated shoulder. I don't know. I haven't heard anything.
I don't know. I just had two nursing students talking next to me.
I'll take their word for it. They know more about this stuff than we do. Full disclosure, you're dealing with an accountant and a broadcaster here.
Yeah.
So you're not dealing with guys who are medically inclined.
I just watch the sports, all right? I just watch and talk.
But anyhow, about that, it sucks to see, but hopefully he's going to be okay, and hopefully we see him back next year, because he is a junior.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that he comes back with a fire lit underneath him. And yeah, I mean, like I said, that was Hoyt's big addition to this year's team, along with Logan, who followed him from John Wood. So it definitely stinks to lose someone of that caliber.
I mean, to just put it in perspective, I'm looking at everybody that's played or that did play in the game against Drury. There is not one senior. So that's something. Obviously, people might transfer. They might do this and that. We also didn't have Mason Wiak. He did not play. That was one of the nursing students I was talking to, was his girlfriend. And she was just saying that, like, he should be cleared within 10 to 14 days. But,
man, what was up with our crowd and dating nursing students, Tony? Like, man.
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think this team could rally back to, let's see, we have 1, 2, 3, we have six games left, and they're all GLVC games.
Yeah, and we have five games out of the GLVC conference tournament, which, again, put in perspective, that probably wasn't going to happen this year. Again, year one of programs in any sport. Under a new coach, usually this is what happens. So, like I said, we got to keep that in perspective. But also, the thing about this team that's very optimistic, and I actually was talking to you about this before we went live, is that this team stays with their opponents for the entire first half. Like, they're within 5-6 points going into halftime, which isn't bad, especially when you're a team that a lot of your guys haven't played together almost at all. But then they go into the second half. They stick with them for like the first 12 minutes of the second half. And then it just gets that last 8 minutes and it just falls apart from there. So this team, the big thing that they're going to have to do, and eventually going into next season is going to have to do, is just learn to get over that hump and get those leads, start getting that momentum so that you don't have those situations late in the second half where you feel like you've exhausted everything and they're just answering back with everything, and then eventually they just have all the momentum and then things fall apart. So it's going to be big for the men's program, not just for recruiting this next year, but also for just game plan adjustments and just almost a mental reset going into next year, just to see, like, okay, this is what happened last year. This is what happened to us and why we got down big late. Let's try to readjust ourselves and refocus so that we don't get in those situations. So that's really what the men's program does have going for them, is that they have that potential. It's just needing to get over that hump and competing with the best of the GLVC.
Right. Right. And we're going to push it over to the women's. And I mean, give me one word to describe the women's basketball season.
I don't think a word can do it justice. What Courtney Boyd has done in year two with this program is flat out phenomenal. 18-5, 12-game win streak. And then I think, if I remember seeing it right, that this was the Hawks. They just beat Drury, which Drury is always known for being one of the top-tier programs of women's basketball in D2, always up there in the national title contention. And, I mean, to even tell you, like, how good they are, I mean, their coach left to go be Lindenwood's head coach at a D1, and that's where Casey Bailey left Quincy to go be Drury's head coach. And she's doing a good job there. All applause to her. I mean, Drury's still among the top in the GLVC, so obviously Casey's a good coach, and we do know that we saw that when she was here in Quincy. But Courtney Boy, I mean, last year, this Hawks team just missed a conference tournament bid. And this year, they're right now number 2 in the GLVC. I mean, that's pretty good.
Right. And what's even crazier about it is when you look at their team from last year and you look at their team from this year, no change. No change, really. Just, like, it is the same players for the most part. Same players, different mentality.
Not only just that, but correct me if I'm wrong on this, Tony. isn't this, Nicole McDermott was not on the team last year, if I recall right. Or was she?
I do not think so.
Because I'm trying to remember, like, in full disclosure, we're trying to also use our websites just to make sure that everything's all up and running.
Nicole McDermott came from Clark University. She decided for her master's to come to Quincy, and she's finishing her final year here with
Quincy. So, like, that's definitely been a big addition. Like, Nicole has been the leader of this team this year. But let's also not forget, Marion Blass proved that her freshman season wasn't a fluke. She's still near the top of her game. She's contributing a ton. We've seen Carson Stratton come out and show her stuff. I mean, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, the men. Just this cohesiveness of a team, keeping a team together, that is going to have your program succeed. And Courtney Boyd has done a phenomenal job with that. And, I mean, I knew the Hawks were going to make the conference tournament, but I didn't know they were going to be this good going into this season, where I could make the argument they could win the GLVC conference and get themselves into the D2 version of March Madness.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at their losses on the year, one was Roosevelt, and that was a one-score game. Double OT loss to Upper Iowa. They did lose to Drury at Drury. They played the number one ranked Grand Valley State University. And, I mean, that wasn't horrible, really. And they played the number five Fort Hays State University. So, I mean, it's not like they're losing to, I won't, like, lower-tiered teams. They're losing to high-tiered teams. So,
absolutely. And, like I said, this is where it happens when you let the chef cook. This is what happens. You get good things. And, like I said, Courtney Boyd, I liked the hire when they first made it, especially because she just won the NAIA national title with Clark when she was hired here at Quincy. And she's backing up a lot of the claims that, like I said, that I had, that I thought this program was going the right direction. I thought that athletic director Josh Raby nailed that hire. And I think that this women's program is definitely making the turn for the better. And I think that this is going to be a program that is going to be up there in contention, not just for the GLVC, but someday soon will be up there for a conversation for a national title.
So you're telling me Courtney Boyd came from Clark? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And Nicole McDermott just came from Clark?
Coincidence? I think not.
I think not. Okay. That makes more sense. I mean, you know, you bring somebody in that you're comfortable with, and that I think it just helps having, do I think she came in and just said, oh, I'm the big dog on campus now? No, I think she came in wanting to help not only get herself a master's, obviously, so kudos to her, but she wanted to help when she could, and she didn't want to give up the game of basketball. And what better way than to go run it back with your coach that you had for the time being?
Absolutely. And that cohesiveness is what will always build success. That chemistry of a team is always going to be what drives success. And we've seen it with the baseball team in the past. This community saw it with Hawkins, with his men's basketball team a long time ago. And now we're seeing that with the women's program. And it's just a really cool thing to see. And Quincy is a huge basketball town.
Yes.
But for the uninitiated.
Yes, which is why we're like happy that we're where we're at right now, and that the men's are going to start picking themselves up. And
I'm just really happy. And also, I never thought I'd see the day, and full disclosure on this, when it comes to this, I never thought I'd see the day where there were more people watching the women's basketball team than the men's basketball team. Like, if your name's not Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese, I mean, like if you would have told me that, a women's team's going to have more people in the crowd watching the games, I would have been shocked, because you just don't usually hear about that.
Yeah.
And to see that now here in Quincy, where the community has fully embraced this women's basketball team to a level where they're putting more butts in the seats than the men's team is, that's definitely a really good sign that the program is going places. So like I said, all hats off to the ladies on the team. All hats off to the assistant coaches and head coach Boyd. Hats off to all you. You guys have done a phenomenal job, and we're rooting for you the rest of the way.
Yeah, and I just one more thing is, like, you know me. I watch women's basketball. I'm probably the only person that actually watches the WNBA like that around here. Like, I mean, how often do I talk about it to where it yeah.
Tony, I know a lot. You were a fanboy of, was it Paige Beckers?
Paige Beckers
for
at UConn.
So long. I remember when we first started college, and you were just the biggest fan of hers. And
yes.
I just remember being like, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'll go with it.
Yes, dude. And I just love it. I like watching the NBA. I like watching it. But I actually prefer, I'd rather prefer watching college basketball, you know, March Madness, all that. But women's basketball is always a peak entertainment of mine just because they play with a lot of team dynamic. Like, there's men's teams. I mean, we watched, I mean, Golden State back in the day when it was prime Klay Thompson and prime Steph Curry. I mean, the passes that they made to get everybody a look was just phenomenal. But I think women's sports do that, like, a lot. I think, you know, watching our team, they space the floor well. And then watching the men's, it's like they have those passes, but, like, the connection is not there like it is with women's basketball. So, yeah, hats off to them for that.
And as with the men, it'll just take time. Yeah. We saw what Coach Boyd could do with her past success from the NAIA coaching and translate it to a higher level and just getting that communication going. And I'm sure Coach Hoyt has that in store for the men's team as well. So I do believe that both programs are going the right direction. It's just for the men, I just implore everyone to be patient.
Yeah, and then just to brush over a couple other things. Lacrosse this weekend, I had the chance to go watch the women's game, and I was getting highlight film for it, and it was a good game. It was a great game. Amelia Hamm had 5 goals herself. It was very good to see that we started off the year right, because it's always good to start the year off right. Last year we went 8-11, and I just think that, I don't know, I was watching the team, it looked better, goalie looked better, Madison Whiting Wagner, she did really good. She had a couple of great saves. Davenport's goalie had some really good saves. I can't argue that. And, yeah, they played till the very end, and then they got it done as they scored the last goal to win 12-11, and then they kind of just played a little bit of keep away with the ball. So that was good. And then for the men's side, men's lost their first game of the year against, I believe, Rockhurst. Could be wrong. But they also played Davenport after the women's. I did not go to that game because I was trying to hurry up over to the basketball game because I thought the men's game was already starting. But I was mistaken because I was trying to watch Parker dance. And that's when I showed up, and the place was still packed. And the score was 90-90. And I was like, what's going on here? And it's like, oh, the women's are still playing. But I'm getting off topic.
Long story short, Tony couldn't miss his proud dad moment.
Yeah, I couldn't miss it. But the men's, on the other hand, I mean, back and forth. Started up 3-0, then we were only up 4-3. And when it came to the fourth quarter, we were going back and forth. We'd take the lead, or we'd be down, take the lead, be up for a little bit. Then they tied it with 3 minutes left, and that's when Mason Luoma, assisted by Hawken, scored the game winner with 16 seconds left. So, I mean, got a lot of lacrosse, very, very scrappy sport. I love it. I like watching it. I think it's cool. It's different. I'm more of a hockey guy, but I guess field hockey will do in this town. But, no, it was good to see. And I'm pretty sure that will be home for the next couple games for the men. So, I mean, that'll be good. They play on a Tuesday. That's a little interesting. And then they play Maryville, which I don't know much about Maryville's men's. I know a lot about Maryville women's lacrosse because they're very good. But I'm happy. Our school is really thriving right now. I will say that. Our school is thriving. But, I mean, and then, you know, wrestling, that's going okay. I can't really speak too much on it. I know you PA'd one of the days.
I did PA one of the days, and it was a heartbreaking loss, the one I went to. But that also comes with full disclosure that I like watching mixed martial arts, boxing, in my own spare time. So I understand what's going on, but it's also one of those things where I'm like, yeah, the point system, I don't quite yet, because I don't know like the back of my hand, but at least from the moments I saw, the team has potential. And while his record may not show up, Maxim Reiner, dude's got some power and he's got some slams. If you've ever watched like a prime UFC fighter that's a wrestler just slam their opponents to the ground, like a Daniel Cormier or a Brock Lesnar, You know exactly what kind of slams I'm talking about, and you will see that from time to time wrestling. But they've had a decent year. They've had a couple people be a champion at tournaments. So I mean, it's a developing program. It's still very early on in the program's history. So again, similar to what I said earlier, just let the coaches cook, and success will follow.
Yeah, and then to just kind of go over one last thing of our sports, as many people know, you're a former bowler. I'm a bowler on campus here. We wrapped up the year. We wrapped up the year, and all we have left is sectionals, and that's in about a month from now.
And it's gonna be goodbye, Tony, for you.
I know. It's so hard to leave. Like, I hated leaving my high school. But I actually do think we have a chance to do something this year. I mean, not saying that we didn't do anything last year. We averaged 196 at sectionals, and that was good enough for 11th place, I think.
I think so, if I remember correctly.
I mean, I think we have a chance to go maybe top seven. Granted, that still doesn't get you into sectional or nationals, but it's always a step in the right direction. I mean, coming from year one, we bowled five tournaments. That wasn't good enough to get into sectionals. Year two, add more money, add more players, and we get a sectional bid. Year three, sectional bid's like top 80, so I think we were like 74 or something. We were something weird like that.
Let me actually check on that, because I actually have the photo of the exact standings that the live stream had when they were announcing it. So let me pull that up here. We were 74th in that year two.
74. Okay, then add more people, add new coach. Little bit of a setback, still like 60 something, I'm pretty sure.
If I remember right, yeah, that one I don't recall as much, but
60 something. Bam, add more people. Okay, so now we're at like 16 guys on the team. You still got your core 5-6 people from the start, and coach gets to develop a little bit, understand people more. That's putting it lightly. And we're sitting at 37.
I haven't checked the rankings as of late, but around that area, if I remember right. But there was also times in the year where we broke the top 25. I think it was very early on in the year, if I recall right. But still, for a program that basically started overnight when we came in.
Right. We didn't even know if we'd have five guys when we got here.
Yeah, about to say, like, I remember, like, it was you, me, C. Whitty, Brendan Unseld.
And then Anthony.
Anthony Arroyo, and then Austin Owen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had fun, but we wanted more. We truly did. And, yes, to verify what you said, yes, 37th was where the guys' team is at.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, I'm very happy. I think they have a chance to be something really good next year, and I hate not being there, but I think they lose out a lot with me not being there, but they just need somebody to fill that leadership role. And they'll figure it out. But I don't know what recruits are coming in. We don't get talked about that as we did last year. Last year we were like, oh, boom, I got this guy coming in. I got this guy coming in. I got this guy coming in. We've seen two recruits, one recruit. I think I bowled with one recruit.
So we've had a few come in, more than that, because I know I've given them their tours of campus. So I know we've had a few come in, but
whether they bowl with the team or not.
Yeah, even being an assistant coach, I still don't, assistant coach / student manager for full title, but still, I still don't even know who's here, who's coming, who's not, or who's interested. Like I just do my part.
Yeah.
I do my job, and then I move on with the rest of my life. So it's one of those things where as the players, that's not necessarily also our job to know that necessarily.
Right.
Like if we know it, great. If we don't, it's not our job, so we don't need it. Our job's to go out there and perform, and that shouldn't affect how we perform anyway. So,
yeah. I mean, like I said, next year, I think everybody's returning. I think we're losing a couple people, but they're JV people, which, if anybody doesn't know the way college bowling works, JV has no say in our ranking. It's just the varsity and who you take on varsity. And I'm just praying that we take the right people when it comes to sectionals, because I feel like we might not. I feel like we'll take our regular five, and I just feel like those other three people that come into sub might not be who we need at that time, but there's nothing we could do because, you know. And I just hope we get away from Stardust. I'm really hoping we just get away from that place.
You want to be going to Tennessee?
Yes, I want to go to Smyrna. I want to explore a little bit. If not, I guess it's okay too. I like Stardust. I bowl there all the time.
It's home.
Yeah, it's home. It's easy for my parents to get there. It's during or spring breaks right after it, so pretty sure.
Usually from the last few years, it's been sectionals and then we go straight into spring break. So it's usually the guys will usually get a waiver for the tournament, like if we decide to leave with our parents when we're done. So it's usually like that, I think I said that Friday is the last day of classes, but we usually leave on that Thursday, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, because we do individuals on Friday.
Right. So, and then Friday, like you said, individual, Saturday, Sunday, it's all Baker style, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
It's a long day. You wouldn't think from when you know Baker format that it does, but it does. And then with that in mind, you just also, and I remember that, and then right after that, you're allowed to go home. So you get that week off, which is still nice, but this time it could be a little more bittersweet.
Right. I mean, I'll take it, though. I know some players on the team have to travel a little bit far to get back home, but that's not me, so I'm okay with that.
Full disclosure.
I love my teammates, full disclosure. but yeah, I mean, I don't know, but we will move on because we got just a little bit of time left and just talk about something that's been taking the world by storm, I guess. And they're trying to make a lot of comparisons for it, but I just don't think anything will do its justice. And that's Luka Doncic getting traded to the Lakers for Max Christie and Anthony Davis.
All I want to say is this would not happen to Mark Cuban. that trade broke my brain when you and Connor told me it happened. Because one thing I will never, ever say LeBron's the GOAT. I will never say that. No, Michael Jordan is.
Yes.
Sorry, Wesley Martin. But to get there's no doubting LeBron is one of the greatest to ever play the game. It's why would you give him one of the best players in the league and get a guy in Anthony Davis who was having a great year, but then literally gets hurt.
The first game.
Day one, he gets hurt. I just, the more that we get away from that trade, the more it breaks my brain. Why a Mavericks GM was like, you know what's a good idea? Let's go get Anthony Davis. Okay, yeah, great, great, great. But what are we giving up? Luka?
Yeah, I mean, that's just crazy. To put it into perspective, Luka in like 20 days is turning 26. He's 25 years old. He's made the NBA finals last year. Very upsetting. Made the NBA finals, had five all-star appearances, and he's been on five all-NBA first teams. So they have no business trading that. You have no business trading that.
Absolutely. So I just looked it up just to verify. Yeah, Luka is a five-time NBA All-Star, five-time All-NBA First Team, mm-hmm. 2019 Rookie of the Year, 2019 All-Rookie First Team, which, of course, he was the scoring champion last year. And then you also bring in, like, his EuroLeague accomplishments with Real Madrid.
Right, right.
So, I mean, there's just no way to slice it. This trade doesn't make any sense.
No.
I can guarantee you a decade from now, this will go down as one of the most baffling, what are you doing trades. And I don't like to say this very lightly. So, full disclosure. I do not want people to lose their jobs, but this is a trade that is a fireable offense.
Yeah. Yeah. And to put it into perspective, I mean, Anthony Davis says 10-time All-Star, 4 All-NBA first teams. Okay, so Luka's already got 1 All-NBA first team over him. He'll probably get it this year again. Maybe. Granted, Anthony Davis has 5 NBA defensive team, all-NBA defensive team, which isn't saying much when you're a forward slash center and you're known to get boards. I mean, if you like, when you look at Anthony Davis's resume, and he's won the finals, right? He was a part of that bubble season.
I think that was year one of Anthony Davis in Los Angeles when they won the Mickey Mouse ring. But don't get this misconstrued. Anthony Davis is a good player. We're not going to deny that. I think to deny that would be hypocritical. It's just what you gave up doesn't make sense. I mean, you could want to go into a rebuild, but then wouldn't you want Luka there if he's so young,
right,
to be a centerpiece? I mean, the Mavericks are currently 8th in the Western Conference. Now, granted,
that still gets you in.
But it gets you into the play-in, but you look at that Western Conference, and you have to, if you were looking at it, the amount separating them from being 8th versus 11th, which is out of the play-in tournament entirely, is 1.5 games. Why would you trade your superstar for Anthony Davis when you are literally on that cliff of missing the postseason if you just have one bad losing streak? Why would you do that? And now the Lakers, they're thriving now. Like, the Lakers, they're 4th in the conference. And they, I mean, granted, they're 10.5 games out of first place. No one's touching the Thunder. But then you look at it, the Lakers are only now 3 games out of second place, which, again, big win streak, which they're on a 5-1 right now. And the only reason they're not third right now is because the Nuggets decided to go on a 6-game win streak. I just feel like the Mavericks gave the Lakers too much to where now we can't have that conversation with Lakers might be a team to watch when it comes postseason time. Though I pray that they're not. I'm hoping a first-round exit is in the works, but I know better than to doubt LeBron when it comes to that.
Yeah, I never doubt LeBron. Granted, Michael Jordan is my GOAT. So, but also like, Luka has very minor injury issues. Anthony Davis has major injury issues, so that's another thing. I mean, he is called the glass tower for reasons.
Don't get me started on fragile players. I can go on a novel about Christian Watson on the Green Bay Packers. Don't get me started.
Oh, is that your guys' wide receiver one, right?
According to Brian Gutekunst, yes. And speaking of Green Bay, I am sad Aaron Rodgers is no longer going to be a New York Jet.
Sam Darnold's not going to be a Viking, and guess
what? It's happening again. It's happening again, and I'm not here for it. It's happening again, and I am not here for it. I don't think I could handle... When I first started watching football in 2009, Brett Favre was already a Viking. I never grew up watching Brett Favre as a Packer, so I didn't get that. This is going to be me watching Aaron Rodgers maybe in a Vikings uniform, and I'm not here for it.
I think he's got to retire first, right? He's got to retire and come out of retirement.
No. How the Brett Favre... He's literally doing the Brett Favre arc. It is literally the Brett Favre arc, and I don't understand why it's so much... It's happened so often. The only team that can save me at this point is Pete Carroll's Raiders at this point, because they're the only team that I think could sign him, and I'm like, please. But then... Does that mean Devontae's coming home?
Oh, God.
Wait, that's right. It's not going to happen because Brian Gutekunst doesn't want to pay a wide receiver one. That's right. I forgot. Because why would you help your young receiving core and not go get a number one wide receiver that you know, that teams know is going to get the majority of the targets, but that allows your younger guys to develop because then they're playing man and they can adapt because they have to play like one-on-one rather than because your number one's going to be double-teamed. So then guess what? Oh, your young guys will start to develop. You want to know why that Green Bay Packers team from that was drafted in 2018 from Brian Gutekunst to 2021 worked? It's because you had Devontae Adams there, so you could have guys like Alan Lazard develop. You could have guys like Randall Cobb be there as a safety net. You could have guys like MVS, as many times he dropped the ball, be the vertical guy because you had Devontae Adams there for this different diversity in terms of your receiving game. Green Bay don't want to do that, but I'm going to stop myself ahead because I could go on a full tangent about this, but we have one more section, don't we, Tony?
Yes.
So, me and Tony follow this Instagram account called the MLB Hall of Good Podcast, where they talk about just the most random baseball players on the planet. So, I'm going to try and... I'm looking at seeing a post here and see what if you remember these guys, Tony. So, this one was 2 days ago from recording this episode. It says, who else is down to boycott the Rangers until they retire Nick Tep... I remember this, how to say his name. Tepish's number... Who else is down to boycott the Cardinals until they retire Xavier Scruggs' number?
Oh, my gosh.
That's a name and a half.
Wow.
Who else is down to boycott the Yankees until they retire Zelis Wheeler's number?
I don't even remember who that is.
If you don't watch NPB like I do, guys know it in Japan.
Okay.
Oh, this one hurts the soul. Who else is down to boycott the White Sox until they retire Alexi Ramirez's number?
Yes, dude. Yes.
That, I don't know if that fits their quota, but who else is down to boycott the Reds until they retire Chris Heisey's number? Who else is down to boycott the Red Sox until they retire Bryce Brentz's number?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Who else is down to boycott the Marlins until they retire JT Riddle's number? Who else is down to boycott the MLB until every team, and I say this, every team retires Lyle Overbay's number?
No. Oh, my goodness. That's bad.
Hey, it gets worse. I mean, there's one where it says, we're getting older, baby, and it's got Mark Burley in a White Sox jersey, and then the next photo is him in a Marlins jersey.
Ooh.
And then we got, I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and then we got Joe Creedy in a White Sox jersey versus him in a Twins uniform, We've got Did It Ever Drive You Crazy? And I'm trying to remember. You could probably tell me what player this is. I don't think it's not who I. It's not Bobby Jenks because I think he's in this post, but it's not this one. I don't think.
It looks like Rich Hill.
Oh. Why would they choose a White Sox photo for that? No one knows him for being on the White Sox.
Did he actually play for the White Sox? Now that I'm thinking about it.
But this guy did. 2005 World Series close of Bobby Jenks. Oh, no, not the end of the year. And this one made me sad. Speaking of Alexi Ramirez, remember when he was a Padre?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Let's see. That was definitely not Rich Hill. That was not Rich Hill.
Okay. I was about to say, like, I'm like, why would you put him in a White Sox jersey? Cubs jersey, maybe, but, or Dodgers jersey, but.
Rich Hill's played for the Cubs, Orioles, Indians, Angels, Yankees, Athletics, Dodgers, Twins, Rays, Mets, Pirates, and Padres.
I need to know this answer now. It's not Benny. I don't think it's Ben. Yeah, it's not Benny because it had been a White Sox guy. Who would have played?
It was a pitcher, right?
It was a pitcher. Was it him? Was it this guy I'm looking up?
Let's see.
It's Jake Peavy.
Oh.
It's Jake Peavy. Why are they choosing a White Sox jersey when
he was a
Padre? Yeah. I mean, yeah, he did play for the Sox for a good number of years. He played, I think, for 4 years with them. But that's an interesting choice because he played for the Padres from 02 to 09.
Yeah, Padres, White Sox, Red Sox, Giants.
Hey, I know about that 2016 Giants team. I wonder what happened to them. Not like they went and lost to the World Series champs, but. But baseball season's right around the corner. Cubs players just reported for, at least pitchers and catchers report for spring training. I am ready for baseball. I am ready to go to a Cardinals game. Yes, as a Cubs fan, I go to Busch Stadium more than I do Wrigley Field. Blame the pricing and blame the fact that the Cubs are usually higher up in the standings as of late than the Cardinals have been. But, yeah, I'm ready for the full Major League Baseball season to start.
I agree. And last question, because we're nearing the end here. Last question. Today is Super Bowl Sunday. Eagles Chiefs.
The Meteor. I'm rooting for the Meteor. I'm not rooting for anyone. I want the Meteor to win. But in all honesty, if you're going to ask me who I want to win, Eagles, I'm sick and tired of every single major network shoving Taylor Swift down our throats. And I'm not here for it. It's why I enjoyed the Netflix broadcast, because they really didn't show her. But Devil Magic will always win in the end.
No.
The three-peat is coming, and the NFL will do whatever it takes to make sure that three-peat happens. And I'm guaranteeing, and I've made this joke for a long time, this season is ending with the Chiefs winning a three-peat at this point, and Travis Kelce's going to propose to Taylor Swift, because that is what makes the money.
Hey, the only thing that I said was that it was going to be a repeat Super Bowl. That's all I said from I don't even know how long ago, but I said it would be repeat Eagles-Chiefs, but I'm not giving it to the Chiefs. I gotta take the Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
All I can tell you this, Tony, is that either way, Philadelphia is going to burn after that game because their fans,
regardless.
their fans are going to be rioting in the streets whether they win or lose that game. So it don't matter.
Give me the Eagles to win, Saquon for MVP, although I think it'll somehow go to Jalen Hurts. Saquon for MVP, coin tosses heads, Gatorade's going to be purple.
Purple?
Yes, yeah. Gatorade's going to be purple, and the score is going to be 31-28.
Oh my. Are you actually thinking that's going to be poetry? just we're going to flip things and the Eagles are going to kick the game winner at the very end as opposed to the Chiefs. My bud, I want you to be right, but
no, it's going to be 28-31.
The refs, the refs.
The Chiefs are going to try and go down, right? The Chiefs are going to try and go down and score cuz that's the Mahomes fashion, and the refs aren't going to be able to save them. They're gonna choke it out to where the refs don't save them.
Also, what I find funny, like Chiefs fans are like, oh well, we're like middle of the pack when it comes to bad calls, because like someone did a statistic saying like, oh well, when it comes to bad calls in the game, we're middle of the league. We don't get more calls. It's not the fact that every call goes right. It's during the critical moments that your calls go your way. There's coincidence. And then there's patterns, and that's a pattern.
Hey, I just want to say I'll never see a call as bad as the Saints-Rams no call.
Okay, quick trivia before we wrap up here, Tony. Do you know the two players involved in that play, like the wide receiver and the corner?
Roby Coleman.
Yep, Nicole Roby Coleman. Yep, that was the Rams corner. Yep. Who was the Saints wide receiver?
Tommy Lee Lewis.
W's. And for those who don't know, Tommy Lee Lewis currently plays in the Canadian Football League.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the Hawk Talk podcast at Quincy University. We are part of the QU Media Podcast Network, and you can find us at QUmedia.net. I'm your host, Tony Lundy, joined by
Parker Limonstall.
And just know it's a great day to be a Hawk.
Caw-caw!